You know, last year when I was here, I spoke about, well, I tended to try to give an idea about where I thought the highs and lows of the year would be, and basically talked about potential for beans to have new highs over the previous year, and we came close on that. In years ending in a four, okra beans tend to either come real close to looking at the highs of the year before, or they take them. And last year we came, I want to say we got very close, maybe within 30-some cents, of getting the previous year's high out on July beans. On the new crop beans, however, we did not get what we were looking for. Usually in years ending in a four, new crop beans, as I showed on a graph, or I think I gave you handouts last year, but basically, years ending in a four, in since 1904 or 1908, something like that, we have had every one of them make new highs over the previous year. Last year's did not. And again, we came close. We got fairly close. I think November beans got to about 1278. And had they have taken out about, I think the high was 1335 or something like that of the year before. And basically, you had inverted basis last year. You had very good basis levels. And that was because you just flat didn't have the beans. And the demand was huge. Part of that demand was being driven by the fact that the Argentine farmer was holding on to his beans and not selling because the rate of inflation of 40%, 40, 43% in Argentina, and also having taxation of 35% on his soybeans, he was not a happy camper, and he held on to his beans, only selling when he needed to. Consequently, the processor, who happens to be Argentina, is the world's largest soy meal exporter. And because they were not able to be processing or crushing at capacity and being in the export market, we garnered that business, and it supported our markets a little better. It also ate up our old crop beans pretty fast. And the USDA was not going to admit it until we got into September, and they felt pretty comfortable, and they finally showed that our carryout coming out of 2013 into 14 was actually at 92 million bushels rather than, I think, what were they talking, 140 or something like that. So had they have admitted that early on in the year, or like, say, by summer, we probably would have had new highs on beans, but that was not the case. In the corn side of things, we thought there was potential for corn to go to $6. And unfortunately, that did not happen. The high on corn was basically 523, I believe, on the December futures. Now, we also noted that we thought that you would see highs in April and May of last year, and that's when it did happen. As far as this year, the grains have a little bit of a different complexion. We think that we're in a year where we're heading in towards lows of the grain markets and moving higher in 2016. And this year is a year, what we call a year of transition. For corn, well, and beans too, but basically beans, we think, has probably seen a major high here. And we think beans will probably move lower, and it's because of all the huge production. If you look at, again, our carryout this year is projected to be 385 million bushels, up from 92. You look at Brazil, and they're, I think, around, they're carrying for 2015-16, I think, is around 28.6 or something like that, versus having been around 16. Huge increases in the oil seeds. But there's changes. And one of the things we've noted last year, too, was that we thought the dollar would had bottomed or was going to be working higher. And we did catch that one. We still are bullish the dollar. Now, the dollar's been rallying pretty aggressively. And actually, without I had forgotten that last year I did handouts. And so I did a PowerPoint presentation for today. And thank goodness I said something to Dave Dickey yesterday about, you know, okay, are you going to have a computer there? I'll just bring my flash drive. And he goes, no, there'll be handouts. And I thought, uh-oh, no, there's no handouts. So anyone interested in the PowerPoint presentation, we will send it to you. All you have to do is call our office number. It's 1-800-527-0051, and we will send that to you. And you can just give your, we can either email it or we can send it by mail. It's however you wish. Just leave a message with whoever answers the phone. The one thing that of the dollar I think is kind of interesting is the dollar is playing a very important role in our grain markets this year. And of course, you know, back in the 70s, the dollar basically had been in a decline until we got into about October of 78. And I thought it was rather interesting because the dollar back then was running around a value of around, through the 70s, of around 93 to 109. And the 93 came the latter. And I thought it was rather interesting because where are we at today? A little over that level, but 109 is an interesting number. 109 is a number that I think we could possibly see the dollar go to. And how I come up with that is it's a percentage of the low for a rally. And if you look at the dollar, and we came off of 164, 165 area, and we moved down into, I want to say, around the 90s, and then we rallied back up into our next rally. We rallied about 50% back of that value, and the dollar rallied up to around, I want to say, 121, 122, somewhere in there, and then we came down to our lows here of the past few years. Well, a 50% rally we have already seen. That was moving up around the 96 level. And so we've done a very similar move as what we've seen of the last correction. However, if I look at percentage of that last rally, it would equate to the dollar rallying to about 109. But I would not expect that to occur until we get into 2016. Does that mean that grain prices have to stay cheap into 2016? No, not at all. Because sometimes there's just a little bit of a delay in response, and then when you look at the dollar, I think that what we have going in psychology is everybody got used to, back in the 70s, we had an attitude by foreign buyers, we better get it bought now because it'll just get more expensive. And then in the 80s, we started to move from mid-80s to into the 90s with an attitude of just-in-time inventorying by our global buyer, and they started doing away with reserves. And then it got to be we had currency wars in the late 90s, and everybody had this attitude, why buy today? It's just going to get cheaper tomorrow. Well, I don't think that attitude is the same today. I think the attitude is we better buy it today because it's going to get more expensive tomorrow. And the dollar is compensating for the decline in what the grain is falling. But if you look at soybeans, soybeans are very closely tied to the dollar and how it responds. And yet, what did we see? We seen China buying so aggressively this last year. In fact, when you look at all the raw commodities that China imports, beans accounted for in 2014 into 15, beans account for 71.7% of all the commodities they're importing. So beans are very tied to China, and justifiably so. But what's interesting is China imported, I think last year, around 70 million metric tons. This year, they're estimated by the USDA to import around 74 million metric tons. What happens if, because of multi-year lows, China decides that they're going to build reserves back in beans? They could jump that number to 80 million metric tons. And by jumping that number to 80 million metric tons, that will put a subtle support under the market, we've already priced in, I believe, in the beans, the psychology of thinking 98 million metric tons for Brazil, and the highest number heard on Argentina was 58 million metric tons. Well, I think that those numbers are coming back down, one, because of the weather. In Brazil, the late planting in means laid out, and on top of it, they've had some pretty decent rains in some areas. So consequently, they're bringing that number back down. Landworth, by the way, was the 98 million metric ton number and the highest out there. But there was others starting to get up there. Well, now a pretty realistic number seems to be that we're hearing 93, 94 million metric tons. Still a huge, huge increase in production. Then you have Argentina. And Argentina last year produced 54 million metric tons of beans. USDA, I think, is around 55.5. Others were as high as 58. All of a sudden, now they're ratcheting it back. Northern Argentina has been seeing heavy, heavy rains, heavy flooding. 20% of the crop is estimated to be being affected. And so all of a sudden, they're starting to ratchet that back down, that it might be 56 million metric tons. Argentina is a big player in our market again this year. The farmer in Argentina is said to be still holding 7 to 8 million metric tons of beans from last year. And the government is trying really hard to get him to sell those because they need the money. But the farmer keeps holding on. Some of the tactics was the Argentine government told the banks they could not loan money to the farmer if he's holding beans, if he's hoarding. They call it hoarding. And then, so they had to go other ways to get their inputs. Then now it's to keep track of them. They're basically making companies that sell these silo bags that they store their beans in. They're making them report how many bags they're selling and to who. So they're trying to keep track. But the presidential elections are this year, and they're in October. And President Cristina Fernandez, who's been in office 12 years, is not very well liked, and it's thought she will not get in. So I suspect the Argentine farmer is going to hold on to beans real tough as we go through summer. And once they get through those elections, because they're counting on that they're going to have a different president. And the two contenders, leading contenders, are appearing to be very pro-lowering taxes on beans. Now, granted, one of them has said, I think he's the president, or not the president, but the mayor of Buenos Aires, he has said that he would lower corn and wheat taxes right away and substantially. And then beans he would lower over time. And he seems to be the most popular. But the farmers are counting on that a new individual is going to be in office. That said, either way, say you get a new individual in office, or you get Christine again, I think the farmer's going to hang on until that fourth quarter of this year. And when they see the outcome, if Christine's president again, things are going to get real tough. And those farmers are probably going to get forced to sell. But when you look at the taxation on corn and on wheat, because the government is controlling the amount of exports that they can have or that they can do, the taxation actually on corn and wheat is even higher. It's up around 50%. So I think the Argentine farmer is going to be really enhancing this again. And what might happen is our soy meal market might just see some pretty good demand again for exports, when normally if that Argentine farmer was selling, we would lose favor and seasonally our demand would drift and drop away for the exports. Now, domestically, with numbers on the uprise, as Chris had talked about, with pork and poultry, we're certainly looking at good demand for soy meal domestically. So the basis levels maybe hang in there and hold fairly well. We have recommended to our subscribers on our website to basically go hand to mouth and buy your meal as you need it, mainly because we're bearish soybeans for a while. This year, if I had to guess a time frame that is real important, I would have to say it's the month of May. going into May and very early June, in years that end in a 5, tends to be real interesting, and it tends to be more times than not a low. And I think this year's a year where we could break down into spring, into May, June. Normally, a lot of people would look for us to rally at that time. I think if you have a rally, it's going to be in basis at that time rather than price. But I think prices will drift down into that window. You'll also be setting the stage, pulling the markets backwards so there's room to rally for a weather scare in the summer. And this could be a year that's going to be interesting. The Farmer's Almanac is talking about or is predicting a very warm, dry summer. And it's talking a large portion of the country from border to border and north to south. And then, of course, the western Corn Belt on west, very dry. The eastern Corn Belt may be a little dry and warm, but the rains keep following the path that the moisture has all winter right along the Great Lakes and on up into the northeast. Well, so far, the Farmer's Almanac's been pretty right. We tend to carry 5 services in our office. And actually, we've never really paid much attention to the Farmer's Almanac until last year and then this year. And we're starting to believe that the Almanac might be pretty close to being on target. So far, they have. In fact, so far, they have actually even caught it to the days in Iowa for what our weather is supposed to be doing. So thus far, we're on that track. Well, the Farmer's Almanac calls for a mild spring, a spring that's totally different than the last 2 years. So crops go in easy, and farmers have time to get things caught up, get it done. Crops go in easy. To me, that's bearish for price move because it'll only make us think that maybe we're going to garner a few more acres. And with the value of what land is, I find it hard to believe we're going to leave anything idle this year. So what do we do? Do we see more bean acres? I think we do. And the only thing is, do farmers change habits? Over the years, there's always been a saying that in nice weather, farmers just love to plant corn. So maybe at the last minute we see some shift. They certainly have time to do it and the ability to do it because they don't have fertilizer on from last fall. And I think that in the beans, it's the South, the Delta, and the Southern Midwest, because why? An El Nino winter into spring, a lot of times you're wet through those areas. And I know in Texas, they have been catching some moisture, but have you seen the drought monitor on Texas and in through the South? They are looking back towards moving pretty dry again. So I think we're going to see bean acres increase in the South, at the expense of cotton. If it's wet, of course, corn will give up some ground, milo. But also, I think that the one area that I'm curious about is the double cropping on wheat acres. Remember, less wheat acres, what's going to go on those less wheat acres? I think, what was it, 1.5 million less wheat acres that we've seen in the last government report? Well, okay, what will we do? Will we put those more to beans, or will they plant sorghum? I'm thinking farmers in those areas may plant sorghum because sorghum basis is huge. In some areas, it's been running as much as $1 over the board. And so it's enticing them, and it's because of Chinese buying last year when China had done away with or didn't allow MIR 162 and canceled out imports of U.S. corn because of concerns of contamination of MIR 162. That was merely feeding their allowing them to get rid of really crappy corn out of the Northeast, because why? They'd had 13 typhoons in the season before. And that was a lot of corn that had been in storage. It was moldy and bad quality. It needed to get to the South as fast as possible. They weren't going to get that done if they kept allowing U.S. corn of good quality and cheaper cost into the country. So what happened? They banned imports of U.S. corn, but immediately alternatives, sorghum, barley, DDGs. And what interestingly is, our exports went up almost comparable to in the others as to what it would have been if we'd have stayed exporting corn. So they just kind of changed the picture a little bit. Just recently, I think in the past month, at the port of Guindao, there has been a finding of, I think, around 886 or $888 million worth of soybeans in soybean values, but soybeans that were smuggled. And some of this could be tied back to, could be tied basically to shadow banking, but also, even if it's tied to shadow banking, and if all the receipts end up, or certificates end up being for real, some they say are false, but if they are real, then is that indicating that China has a bigger appetite for soybeans than what they've been indicating all along? And they've just been getting beans under the table, and but they don't really report it as such to us, so it comes from us, it comes from South America. Now, another thing is, China is expected to go from this 74 million metric tons of beans to 107 million metric tons by 2030. And what's really interesting is there's another country that nobody even talks about, and it's India. India has an economy that is very stable. And when I send out these PowerPoints, you'll see there's a breakdown by the World Conference Board that shows the outlook and the forecasts from, well, it goes from the last, I want to say 2008 through 2013, 10 through 2013, then it takes in 14, 15, then it goes from 2015 to 20, and from 2020 to 25. Now, granted, these forecasts will change down the road as we go. What was interesting was India is about the only country that stays real stable in their outlook for growth or GDP. And they're basically supposed to be right around 6% growth. What's even more interesting is India's population between now and 2030, just 15 years away, is forecast to grow to 1.5 billion people. That's larger than China. And India are huge oil seed users. So maybe all this production that we're seeing in growth in South America, which makes me wonder, by the way, if they aren't about to max it out. They might be able to take beans and take some other crop and fuse it into beans, but I don't see Brazil gaining much more in production than what they are this year. And the reason being is, take a look at Mato Grosso. Mato Grosso is the largest producing state in Brazil. And Mato Grosso's production, yeah, they had increased production this year, but it was because they increased acres, but they did not increase yields. And so the only way that they can push that yield, and it's because Mato Grosso plants a lot of GMO beans. And it's thought, you know, there's always been the thought that GMO beans do have a yield drag. Well, if you look at the world, about, I want to say 80% of the seeds now are GMO, be it whether it's corn or beans. And in the meantime, you look at Mato Grosso, and they weren't able to increase yields this year, but they increased production because they took it from something else. I think other provinces are going to be the same way. And so I think when they were looking at 98, maybe 98 was too lofty. Maybe 96, 95 is more amiable. But the bottom line is, I think that we're looking at some point here where South America, they overtake us this next year as number one producer of beans in 2015-16. But I think at some point here, their production is going to cap out. But the U.S. is also going to stay in there running. But we're back to that old adage, okay, we'll raise the beans, you raise the corn. And we're doing a good job of raising corn. Yields this year, well, first off, there's only been one other time, I think, that we have had since 1970, 3 years back-to-back where we reduced yields. And it was 1977, 78, and 79. I went back and looked at what corn prices did in those years, and it didn't mean a difference that they really had to go up. Everybody's talking about acres and about carryouts. But what's really important is, what about demand? What's demand going to be doing? And if we see a global economy that starts to do better, which I think it is, if you look at, even though as of yesterday, I believe it was, the European Central Bank started their quantitative easing program, and here since 2008, 7 years out, we're having to use that to make the economies do a little better, but yet retail sales grew the fastest in 9 years for the past month or two out of European Central, the Eurozone. I think that's impressive. And then you take, for the first time in, I want to say, since the early part of 2014, that you've had Spain, Italy, Germany, and France all have their PMIs over 50. That, too, I think is impressive. But I think that the country is starting to grow. And when you look at confidence indexes, not only here in the U.S., which is growing, but over in Europe, the confidence index is starting to turn around and do better. So if you get Europe percolating and doing better, I think that alone is another sign that we're going to start to see some of these other economies. And, of course, India stays doing what they're doing. China, of course, is slowing down. And part of that slowdown in China, I think, is because of Xi Jinping basically clamping down on shadow banking. You know, in China, they do a lot of under-the-table things. And I think Xi Jinping's attitude of going after corruption has slowed the economy somewhat. But he calls it the new norm. And, of course, the IMF predicts that China will run at about, I think they're saying, 6.8% growth this year. China last year had 7.5%. China themselves estimates 7%. The World Conference Board is talking 7% for this year. Well, 7% isn't all bad. And then you look at Southeast Asia. Well, you've got China slowing down. That kind of rubs off a little bit into Southeast Asia. But in the meantime, I think they percolate and manage to kind of tiptoe and walk their way through it, and they do fine. You look at Japan. Now, Japan's been struggling. And Japan's consumptive tax is what I think has really kind of weighed on that economy or that currency. If that currency continued to fall, and if they were to come out with a second consumptive tax like they've talked, all of a sudden Japan, who happens to be one of our largest buyers of corn, is going to have some issues, but it'll ignite another round of currency wars. And the Brazilian real, which I think one of the gentlemen up here had talked about earlier, is down like 30%. And that it is by far down the farthest against the dollar of any of the currencies around on the globe. So when we hear about the euro falling to 8-9 years lows or whatever, yeah, it is. But in percentage, it's not down as far as you would think. So I think when we look at the whole global picture, things are starting to do better. And then all of a sudden, with this dollar pushing, maybe at some point here, what happens? It starts to weigh on the stock market, and maybe the stock market falls back. Another thing we have to look at is crude oil. And crude oil, of course, has had, well, since September, has what, had a 55% correction? And with crude oil falling back as much as it has, I think you couldn't have painted a better picture to try to stabilize things and get things working back for global economies. For emerging economies, it's helping there as well because they have to import a lot of things, and it makes it cheaper to send things to those countries. So cheap crude oil, by the way, it's my understanding, looking back into history, crude oil declines or sharp breaks in crude oil values has always preceded another boom period in the U.S. in raw commodities. So I think when we look at all the money, and Murray kind of touched on the money that's sitting on the sidelines, there is a lot of money sitting on the sidelines. A lot of your funds did not do well last year in commodities. They lost money. And so there's money sitting on the sidelines, but no place to go. They're waiting. They're looking for something. And when you start getting raw commodities cheap, where it's down to like around 30% or something of what the high was, or 40%, 46%. Since 1970, the lowest that beans have ever fell back, ultimately, from an extreme high to an extreme low, I think was around 45, 46%. The 904 and a half low was 50% of the all-time high. So beans can still move lower. Fundamentally, they look like they should. But I think corn, when you take these corn and you have every major producing country in the world going backwards in production this year. Brazil, down sharply in corn acres. What was it, 10, 11%, something like that? Argentina, down sharply in corn acres. Well, Argentina used to be number two exporter. Then you've got the U.S., of course, we're going backwards. You take a look at Ukraine. Well, I want to tell you, things are getting pretty tough in the Ukraine. The government had told them, the ag ministry, to release a lot of flour and food. When they went to do so, their reserves were almost empty. The hryvnia is at 4% or 4 cents on the dollar. What do you think that buys? When people get money, they're running and buying food. So when you look at the Ukraine, how do you think the farmer is going to be able to afford to put in all the inputs that they need, the fertilizers? How are they going to buy it? How are they going to buy all the seed? I think corn production is going down in the Ukraine. Now, last year, they had a deal with China where they, I think for $3 or $4 billion loan, they would, in exchange, take wheat and corn. Well, they have yet to get all their corn. But the Ag Ministry has been in meetings with China and recently inked another deal where they will ship them corn at the expense of some more money. So, but the thing is, Ukraine's hoping to go from 1.6 million metric tons to another million metric tons extra, so 2.6 million metric tons of shipping corn to China. We'll see how good that happens. Because China, after they dropped us on corn last year, they were buying from Thailand, from Myanmar, Laos. They were taking corn from other countries that are normally not very reliable on exporting. And, of course, Ukraine's been part of that. Russia is another issue. Russia's also hurting very badly, and with the price of crude oil going down like it has, it's been very detrimental to Russia's economy, which, of course, is rubbing off into the CIS states. So I think that when we look at the major, and South Africa's another one. South Africa, I think, is number four or five, probably number five exporter of corn. It is thought this year they will turn importer because they're having drought, major drought. And then you look at the demand side of things. Pork and poultry numbers are growing around the world. Beef is in transition. We're turning that corner, expanding back, or hope in time of expanding back in the U.S. Australia is still in contraction. But you've got Europe, you've got Brazil in expansion. And in Mato Grosso, where they have very cheap corn prices, they have been putting in feedlots and what have you to feed corn to. So I think that the meat production around the world is going to be expanding. That's one area we're going to use it. Corn, I think crude oil might have one of your bigger impacts on it for ethanol. But all in all, I think we're looking at a market that is going to be very, very demand-driven as we get more into this year. But what kind of a year do I look for? On Dease corn, if 440 is our high, and that's been the high so far on December corn, if that's your high, wave counts to the downside. Well, the first one was 397. Well, the market went to 396 and three quarters and then bounced back. Okay, the next one's 382 and maybe a half. Then the next one is 351, I think it is. 351, 352, and three quarters. Then the next one, which would be wave five, and it should be like the brick wall of China, and I don't think we'll see it is $2.75. Crude oil, you want to hear some numbers on crude? A wave four on crude oil was 44.13, and we got sort of close to that and then did this nice bounce. A wave five on crude oil is 21.52. Now, if we were to go through 33, which was 2008's low, everybody's going to be thinking we're going into, a recession, depression, whatever. Another thing is the money supply, the velocity of money. The velocity of money is the third lowest or slowest since 1860. In 1932, I think it was around 1.3, something like that. And then the next time we hit, I can't think of the year now, but that'll also be in that PowerPoint presentation, don't hold me to it, I can't even think what year it was, but it was around 1.5. Well, the latest estimate is around 1.5 something again, but it's the third slowest. Well, the other two were in recessions. And according to the St. Louis Fed, we're not in recession. To me, when I look at that chart, it looks to me like the velocity of money only has one direction to go, and that's up. Now, it doesn't mean it has to be straight up. It can be in up and move into a range, so to speak, but not coming and hovering at this low level. I think things are going to get better. And as they get better, demand for your commodities are going to grow. And I think 2016 is going to be a good year. It's also a 30-year cycle, too. 2015 is a 30-year cycle. So I look, if you look at 85, it was a recession in agriculture and basically some lows. But we don't have to stay down. And I took data of all the years going back to 1960. And I looked at years when we had increased production in beans, increased production in corn, and increased production in wheat. And I looked, and then I combined all three together and globally. And I looked at that and went and looked at commodity prices as to see what they did. Would you believe it wasn't necessarily so that prices had to go down? There's other things going on. And part of the economy, the dollar, I think the attitude is going to still be for this year into next year, we better buy now because it's going to get more expensive. Remember, Brazil sells in dollars. And this decline for them is like a cat's meow for the farmer. He buys his inputs in reals and he sells in dollars. Oh, one of Murray's farms in Webster City. Actually, I've known Murray for a long time. Should I tell some stories, Murray? Talk about those good judgments. I've known Murray for quite a while. Murray used to live in Clarion, Iowa, and that's where I live, and my office is in Webster City. And Murray and I used to have a mutual friend who has passed away, but I can remember some good days with that friend. But anyway, the yields around Webster City were actually pretty good. Corn and bean yields both were good. The corn, there was a lot of corn that would be, I would say it went 180 to 220. What was interesting was the northwest corner of Iowa was phenomenal. And yet, those yields were down from the year before. They in the northwest corner of Iowa and even going into south western Minnesota, farmers up there would tell me that they had, well, I'd ask them, how's your yields? And they'd say, oh, 220, 225. I'd say, wow, that's really great. They'd say, well, not as good as last year. The year before, they had 240, 243. So yields, while they were good, were still down. In our area, yields were pretty decent. We had one farmer within about, 40 miles of our office that averaged 80 bushels to the acre on beans. So pretty good. This year, I don't think your yields are going to be as good. I think, you know, look at the eastern Corn Belt. Look at, the eastern side of Indiana and Ohio. How often have you seen the phenomenal yields those guys have been getting? Not very often. And they've had two really good years back to back. And I suspect this year might not be quite as good. We're entering into a time frame, or we've already entered into it, where we see more volatility in our yields. And I think this year a good yield will be trend line at 162. If you do 162 and you take, say you give up 2 million acres of ground, planted ground to corn, you could have a carryout that or a stocks to usage ratio that could drop back to 8%, maybe 7.5%. And you've got growing demand for corn. The one thing I look at that's like a little bit of a issue is wheat. Now, Europe has a lot of wheat. France has a lot of wheat. And that, by chance, I think is maybe something that could kind of, you know, we need to work off that wheat. And a lot of it's feed wheat in France and parts of Europe. You also have Great Britain with the best crop this past year that they've had. They've been importers for, I want to say, 5, 6, 7 years, and they turned exporter this year. So the wheat market, I think, is part of our problem with the corn market. Any other questions? Yes. Okay. I haven't done wave counts per se on the new crop beans, but I have gone back and done price projection as far as value of a low as a value of a high. And the, first off, the 904 was 50%, and this can be any month, you know, be a lead contract. The next would be, I could see beans going down to 823. If we get that 904 out, I think 823 is a doable area, price area. Then 794. And an extreme would be 717.5. Do I think we go to 717.5? No, I don't. And I think what beans have been doing is killing time, just marking time. And I think corn is marking time. And then once we get past, you know, this quarterly report here at the end of the, you know, we had a report today. I don't know what it said, but it's not thought to have been that big of a report. But once you get, it's the quarterly report at the end of the month. There's another thing. On corn, 5 out of the last 8 years, this March report, the USDA has overestimated corn usage. And on beans, in the March report, and I should say taking the final and looking at the March report. On beans, would you believe 23 out of the last 24 years, so since 1990, something like that, would you believe the USDA has underestimated the usage of soybeans as a, compared to the final in, that you would see in January of the next year? So for me, I think the more important report will be this quarterly stocks report here at the end of the month and the first prospective plantings. What I think is interesting is that the USDA Ag Outlook meeting predicted less bean acres, less corn acres, less wheat acres, which was kind of surprising. I think what it took is the bean acres is the one. I think, what did we have, 83.7 million acres last year on beans, and they're predicting 83.5 or something like that. What really amazed me was that they showed less, and yet you talk to Monsanto and different seed companies, and they're all storing more beans, getting ready for the season. But I think that'll end up being wrong. But what I think is interesting on that is, okay, I would think that this report here at the end of the month will show less acres. I think that's going to have some influence on that report. What I wonder about is, when we get into the June report, what if they showed less bean acres in that report. I think it would absolutely shock everybody. And I'm just wondering if that couldn't happen this year. Even though the weather's going to be beautiful, I think, to get your planting done. Now, for the Delta and for the southern parts of the Midwest, yesterday, Commodity Weather Group said that their outlook is that they thought that April would be wet and then May would turn off mild and dry. Well, if that happens, you know, I would suspect then you're going to see, one, more bean acres, but two, you're going to also see the corn market hold together a little better until you get further into the summer. I'm kind of envisioning a summer, a year that goes, prices slip on down in towards May, possibly early June. We put a low in. If we get the weather like the Farmer's Almanac indicates, I could see where we could get a real sharp rally that lasts into about July. And I haven't looked at my cycle windows yet for the summer, but maybe lasts into July 17th, 19th, something like that. Could go early August, but that would be pushing it. And then we turn right back down and we go down into fall. I'm looking for a traditional fall low. And I brought these up to read and I didn't even...